Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. Three, two, one. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, a magical Monday edition, I'm hoping, because the GOP, they have chosen a speaker, and so I guess governance can commence. You know, if I could hear my little buddy Dominic, this show would commence. I can see him. He'll join us shortly, but I cannot speak with him. We are going to have a fine guest joining us on the air in just a short period of time, our buddy John Nichols from The Nation and the Cap Times here locally in Madison. John's going to join us at 4:30 Central Time. And I got a few questions. I'm wearing a battered Packer hat today. It's should be headed towards retirement. And I'm wondering if Aaron Rodgers may follow this hat into retirement. But I wanted to save that till later, Tom. I can see you, man. I can see you squirming. So here, I'm just going to jump into the political headlines. There was a Wisconsin Supreme Court forum, I guess you'd call it. Our friends over at Wispolitics had a little get-together, and I'd like to share a little of the reporting with you. I'm using the reporting from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. The headline here, Wisconsin Supreme Court candidate Janet Protasiewicz assail state's election maps is rigged. She called them rigged. I don't disagree with her, but let me read from the Journal Sentinel. Speaking at a campaign forum Monday, Wisconsin Supreme Court candidate Janet Protasiewicz called state election maps rigged and designed to take away votes from people in larger communities, including Dane and Milwaukee counties. Here is specifically what she said. They do not reflect people in this state. I don't think you can sell any reasonable person that the maps are fair, said Protasiewicz, a Milwaukee County judge and one of the four running for a seat on the state Supreme Court. I can't tell you what I would do on a particular case, but I can tell you my values, and the maps are wrong. Now, I would point out, I'm not sure, you know, it's generally frowned upon for Supreme Court justice candidates to give sort of specific answers on any question of this sort. And I think she's clearly telling us what I want to hear, which is, you know, if the case becomes before the Wisconsin Supreme Court, she would be sympathetic to recasting the maps. That's the answer I want to hear, but I question whether or not I want to hear her say it. You're not supposed to say the quiet part aloud. Anyways, in April 2022, the court ruled 4-3 in favor of a legislative redistricting plan drawn by Republican lawmakers, giving the party's candidates in the legislature a bigger advantage for the next decade. So that'd be two decades in a row. Pardon me. New maps are drawn every 10 years. Former Supreme Court Justice Daniel Kelly, you know, he's running again because he didn't win re-election. Hell, he never won election. He was an appointee by Wanker. Anyways, former Supreme Court Justice Daniel Kelly, seeking a return to the bench, said the court's responsibility was limited to considering legal challenges, not political challenges. Really, when did that constrain you during your brief tenure on the court, Dan? But anyways, here's his quote. When someone tells you, and he is a little pompous, so I'm going to be a little contemptuous when I read the quote. When someone tells you what their values are to the legal challenge, they're telling you how they will decide a case. Unless we are dead set on tearing down the distinctions of the branches of government, we need to make sure the court exists for deciding legal distinctions. Yeah, that all sounds fine and good. That is, you know, the traditional answer. You know, it's all the merits before the courts. But Dan Kelly is the worst sort of partisan. I mean, really, you got a track record, Dan. You were the worst sort of partisan. Anyways, back to the reporting. The earlier event today was politics event being reported by the Journal Sentinel. Now, Protas Sawitz and Kelly joined the other two candidates, Waukesha County Court Judge Jennifer Doro and Dane County Judge Everett Mitchell, during a forum sponsored by WisPolitics, as mentioned. Mitchell agreed with Protas Sawitz's assessment of the state elections map, saying that they only benefit the status quo. He said he hopes future maps are less partisan and represent Wisconsin diversity. On most questions, and this is troubling, I guess I wish I had witnessed this because this seems somewhat robotic, but on most questions, Doro read from a prepared script. What, I plead the fifth? She read from a prepared script and did not answer fully, seeing the issues, including election maps and gun control, might be before the court. That could be. The four candidates are in a hotly contested race for conservative Justice Patient Rogensack's seat, which could swing the makeup of the court from its current 4-3 conservative majority. Did we mention the soul of Wisconsin is on the ballot this spring? The balance of this court really is whether or not we should have hope as citizens. And you, the listener, right now, you will vote on February 21st and you'll pick your favored candidate. And then in the spring general election, I believe that's April 4th, you'll make a final determination. And if you choose wisely, you'll choose one of the quote-unquote liberal candidates, one of the non-conservative candidates, and you will see a change in the direction of the court and perhaps in their rulings on things like gerrymandering. On Monday, Rogensack, I think she's the chief by seniority, you know, Supreme Court, I guess there was a constitutional amendment to strip Shirley Abrahamson of her vaunted role as the chief. But anyways, the outgoing chief, she's not running for re-election. Rogensack endorsed Darrell. And I'm telling you, for Dan Kelly, the pompous, the contemptuous Dan Kelly, that's got a sting. Doro, one of the two conservative candidates running. Kelly, the other conservative, served with Rogensack, if ever briefly, you know, through the appointment of Wanker. Kelly was appointed to the court in 2016 and lost his bid for a 10-year run in 2020 to Jill Karofsky, a member of the court's liberal minority. If I recall properly, the margin of victory is a stunning for the state of Wisconsin. A stunning 163,000 vote margin. Dan, you're a big loser. Dan Kelly, of course. So if Karofsky crushed him by 163,000 votes, regardless of his contemptuous answers, Dan Kelly is probably makes the conservatives a little bit nervous. Because he hasn't exactly had a track record of winning, let's just say. So that's where this Doro comes in. And Doro today, if I understand the reporting, she didn't want to answer any questions. She's kind of there to read a script. Why bother attending the forum if you don't intend to answer? You're not under subpoena. Anyways, each candidate highlighted the individual experiences that they say will make them the best candidate for a 10-year term on the Supreme Court. The candidates also pledged to not let outside funding influence how they would rule from the bench. Well, that, of course, that's the stock answer. And to recuse themselves if there is a conflict of interest. The top two vote-getters during the primary on February 21st will go into, and here it's confirmed, an April 4th general election. And while abortion is likely to be one of the key issues in the Supreme Court race, it was not a focus of Monday's forum. Republican legislative leaders have said they don't want the race to become a one-issue contest. I'm sure they don't, because if it's about abortion, it's not going to go well for the conservatives. We've already seen that demonstrated in a number of elective cycles, especially the most recent midterms. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss hopes the Republican-controlled legislature can introduce amendments to the state's abortion ban or write a new law that will be signed by Governor Tony Evers. That's not going to happen. So the state Supreme Court doesn't have to weigh in. Well, here's the problem. Robin Voss doesn't believe a woman should have the right to control whether or not she carries an abortion to term. He's pro-birth. And the only exceptions, the only things he would want included in these amendments, this constitutional amendment thought process, of course, is exceptions for rape or incest. Because that is such an extremist point of view. It's only held by like 9% of Wisconsinites, including their gubernatorial candidate, Tim Michaels. So anyways, Voss, you're not going to skirt the issue. You're not going to somehow dethrone or defang this issue during the course of this elective cycle with some crap legislation that Tony's going to get boonswoggled into signing. I don't believe it's going to happen. Evers has repeatedly said he wouldn't sign a bill unless it codifies abortion rules in place under the 5 decades of Roe v. Wade. Now, state leaders have grappled with the abortion policy since the U.S. Supreme Court struck down its 1973 ruling legalizing abortion nationwide, leaving it up to state officials to decide their rules. The decision put back into effect the state's 1849 law banning doctors from providing abortions unless women would die without the procedure. You gonna die? Well, then maybe I guess you can take some control over your own body. Mitchell and Protasiewicz cited the Dobbs decision as the court's worst ruling in the last 50 years. And the candidates' fundraising varied widely. Now, they list off some first half of the year fundraising. I would tell you, this doesn't really give us much meat. The meat's really going to be in the second half fundraising of 2022 because, of course, this is a early spring election in 2023. So what they raised early part of last year really bears little relevance, but it's reported here. I'll share it. Early campaign finance reports show Protasiewicz, who declared her candidacy in May, raised $168,000 in the first half of 22 and has $164,000 in her campaign account on June 30th, according to our friend Matt Rothschild at the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Mitchell raised $24,000 in the first 6 months. It has $27,700 in his campaign account on June 30th. But understand, this is like January of the next year. You better have raised more and spent a lot more. Come back more devils.
When they go low, we get high. The Devil's Advocates.
Listening to the Devil's Advocate Radio Show, the 420 break, working on some tech, but we're working through it. You can join us on the phones before our pal John Nichols joins us at the bottom of the hour at 844-967-2789.
This is the sort of treatment a Detroit fan like you deserves, Dom.
Yeah, it's been a glorious couple of days, Gritty. I'm in a pretty good mood, so I'm okay to deal with it, man.
You know, my mood was better before, I'll just put it to you that way. Anyways, dude, so, you know, the Wisconsin Supreme Court race is going to heat up quickly, and some of the justices, or at least the candidates in waiting to be Supreme Court justices, they're kind of saying the quiet part out loud. Like, Protasiewicz, I was a little surprised, you know, the maps are rigged, they're wrong, that's just my philosophy, but, you know, can't tell you how I'm going to rule on the case. Really? I mean, didn't you just tell us how you're going to rule on the case? I mean, and effectively, I feel the way she does. I don't disagree with the answer she gave. And the flip side of that equation is you got the celebrity judge from Waukesha reading off a script. I can't answer these questions because this may come before the court. Now, I think there's probably a happy medium between those two answers. You know what I mean? Like, you must give us some indication. Why would we possibly want to vote for you? Right? You're on the ballot. Why would we vote for you? What indicators can I get from your non-answers about why I'd want to vote for you? Well, I'm not sure if they accomplished their goal. A lot of non-answers. Protasiewicz gave a little too much.
But if non-answers were the goal, then they have achieved it. And if Protasiewicz came out and gave an indication of what her thoughts are on the current map, so getting into the legalese of it, and the other justices, like Doro, declined to comment, I think that tells you everything you need to know about how those judges feel about about the redistricting maps.
And what about Dan Kelly? Oh, very pompous, Dan. I like to do a pompous voice when I do the Dan voice.
Again, how it says everything. If you can't even get your former coworkers to rally behind you and vote for you, then apparently you weren't that memorable.
Tom, I'm not clear that you'd earn my endorsement, depending on the office. You know what else I noticed over the course of the weekend? Dan Kelly was a wanker appointee. And the wanker must be nearing the end of his contract with the Young Nazi Association, because I see him wading into, sort of social wedge issues as much as he possibly can. And of course, giving opinions about the Packers like he was on the roster. I love how he wraps himself in the colors of every sporting team. I mean, when this guy puts on a Wisconsin sweatshirt, I mean, the irony is galling in that he claims to be a Marquette alumni, not by graduation, but by attendance. You don't see me wearing no offense to you, Kutschka, but you don't see me wearing a Golden Eagle sweatshirt, man. You can only have one loyalty. And wankers, only loyalty is to wanker, right? Over the course of the weekend, there was some reporting at the Capital Times. There is a student-planned drag show at Madison East High School here in Madison, where I live and grew up. There has been some information put out there about this upcoming event. I'm going to share a little of the reporting and then wanker's attitude. A student-planned, family-friendly drag show at East High School set for the evening later this month drew the ire of right-wing Twitter this week. What is right-wing? Isn't it all right-wing Twitter at this point? First highlighted.
These days, it sure feels like it.
First highlighted by the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty Lawyer on Tuesday, East Principal Mickey Smith's newsletter mentioning the event was shared Thursday afternoon by the libs of TikTok, an account that has been suspended from Twitter multiple times for violating guidelines and targeted harassment. The account has focused much of its energy on anti-LGBTQ messaging, often focused on schools and educators. Smith's message, shared in the January school newsletter, invited community members to a January 19th after-school event. Here's what she said. I'm proud to highlight our GSA, Gender and Sexuality Alliance, organization for all its hard work they do to promote a supportive and inclusive environment. Our GSA has been working hard to plan East's first annual family-friendly drag show intended to celebrate, affirm, and support EHS students and staff in our LGBTQIA+, as well as our larger school community. Now, MMSD spokesperson Tim Lamons wrote in an email Friday, the district has no comment at this time on the situation. Madison Metropolitan School District. The libs of TikTok tweeted, and it was viewed nearly 500,000 times. The principal of at Madison East High School is inviting students and their families to attend a, air quotes, family-friendly drag show at the school. They claim the show will celebrate and affirm LGBTQ+ students and staff and praise the work of Gender and Sexuality Alliance Club. It was followed by a second tweet, which tagged East High School in the district, and shared a screenshot of a blurb allegedly written by a drag queen about the Drag Queen Story Hour, a type of event that has happened around the country. Libs of TikTok wrote that the purpose of drag for kids is to teach them to live queerly and introduce queer pedagogy. A little bit more. Scotty Wanker had to get himself involved. The desperate former governor of the state of Wisconsin tweeted out, let's be clear. Drag shows are strip shows. They're wrong. They're particularly wrong at school. They're deathly. not family friendly. Drag shows are not strip shows. Instead, they typically feature someone identifying as a man dressed in women's clothing, often performing a dance. The school board president, Ali Muldrow, said, "Our young people have every right to have an expansive, creative, self-determined, and liberating relationship with gender expression. I am incredibly grateful for every adult who has made our students feel safe to be exactly who they are." Regarding Wanker, she said, "Walker's characterization is intentionally inaccurate and misleading." She added that using children at school to stoke division is not only irresponsible, it's freaking dangerous, Wanker. Come back with us, John Nichols from The Nation. More Devil's Advocates. A somewhat magical Monday. Some of the magic's gone.
The Devil's Advocates. Radio for nasty women everywhere.
Welcome back to The Devil's Advocates Radio Show, a magical Monday edition. I think it's getting magical right now. We got John Nichols from The Nation, our good friend. John, welcome back to The Devil's Advocates, man.
Good to be with you, brother.
Now, did you stay up late like I did on Friday night and watch the 15th vote, the speaker election of Kevin McCarthy? And what did you think of that little affair?
Totally did. Of course I stayed up. It was good TV, especially there, like when McCarthy was down there staring down Gates, and then looked like somebody made a move on Gates or maybe McCarthy.
Do you think a fight was breaking out?
Well, it didn't quite get there, but you had sort of that little like all-star wrestling choreography and stuff. So I thought, you know, they put on a pretty good show.
Well, let me ask you this. Has effectively Speaker Kevin McCarthy, has he given away the whole store? I mean, my understanding is they haven't even passed the governing rules of the House. He's got like a 3-page secret memo full of concessions, John. Is it possible he got the speakership, but he'll never be able to govern?
Well, first off, he may get his rules this afternoon, or he may not. There was some push and pull on that, but I think that looks like he might be able to pull off the rules. But in answer to your core question, will he ever be able to govern? No, of course not. The rules package that he's putting together, or that he apparently has put together, undermines his ability to govern, right? Or his ability to basically run the chamber. He will be the weakest speaker, certainly in modern American history, maybe in American history. And he will always operate with the threat that if he does something that this hard right, you know, fringe of his caucus, maybe as few as 5 or 6 people, anything that they object to, they can upend him, or at least cause a crisis that he'll have to deal with. And so, no, he is, I think you saw the beginning and the end of Kevin McCarthy's speakership at precisely the same moment.
John Nichols, I don't know if you'd seen, but the Republican Alabama representative, Mike Rogers, he's the one that was ready to charge the mound the other night in the House chamber on Matt Gaetz.
Looked it.
Now he is.
It looked it.
He's stepping down from the steering committee. Apparently, you know, that little hullabaloo on the floor has had some detrimental effects to his ambitions in the House, John. Do you think that's appropriate?
Yeah. Well, yeah, technically I don't think he should be, you know, throwing punches on the floor, threatening people. But if in fact he was making a move on behalf of Kevin McCarthy, and whether legitimate or not, and within hours or days he's out of his position, that doesn't bode well for Kevin McCarthy, right? It's the signal here is if you stand up for Kevin McCarthy, maybe inappropriately, as in I'm quite willing to accept that, that it was inappropriate, but maybe inappropriately, McCarthy's going to side with the people that weren't his friends. And so once again, you see in this calculus evidence that McCarthy is not in charge. He has the title, but effectively he is so afraid of his hard right flank that, you know, he's not really able to manage the operation. He's basically bowing to them. If they don't like the way somebody looks at them, that person is on the out.
Folks, you are listening to the Devils Advocates Radio Show. My good friend, John Nichols. Dom, hopefully you'll join us a little bit later in the conversation. What do you think the worst offense was, John? Do you think it was Mike Rogers on the house floor or Packer Quay Walker pushing a Detroit trainer last night?
Well, you know, look, I'm going to be very, very cautious about any criticism of the Packers. Look, there's a difference between sports and hopefully Congress. On a sports field, things happen that are inappropriate, and you call fouls, you sanction people, you even throw them out of the game, stuff like that, and that's how you maintain the order, you know, on a sports field. But I have news for you. Sports is different, or should be different, than governing. And so at the end of the day, the chaos on the house floor on Friday night, I hate to sound too proper here or anything like that, but frankly, that ought to be of a lot more concern to us, even though I will acknowledge that in Wisconsin, probably whatever chaos there was on the football field may be of more concern to the average person.
John, how do you think it bodes for their governance? I mean, I'm less concerned about the House adopting their own rules than debt ceilings.
Mm-hmm.
The former president, Donald Trump, came out in a all-caps missive today, basically saying, let's go primary Mitch McConnell. And then he said some insulting things about Mitch McConnell's wife. And then basically said, you know, the right thing to do is to hold the full faith and credit of the United States hostage. And I'm not sure, you know, he seems diminished, John, but it still seems like, you know, any bad idea that Trump comes up with, there's going to be some willing co-conspirators on the House floor.
Oh, yeah, there's going to be buy-in. And the fact is that you don't need a lot of members to make that buy-in have meaning, right? You know, if you've got five people, you pretty much can do what Trump wants done, or at least had the potential to force it. So here's the bottom line. Somebody probably ought to inform Donald Trump that Mitch McConnell's not up for re-election until a long time from now. So the threat of a primary there isn't really all that meaningful. It's just talk. But the talk about the debt ceiling, that's a big deal, because Chip Roy, who is a congressman from Texas, former aide to Ted Cruz, very, very smart member of Congress. You may not agree with him, but he knows what he's doing. Chip Roy has a strategy to use these budget issues, debt ceiling issues, conference committee negotiations, all of this to basically sow chaos. And the fact of the matter is that I think what you're looking at here is a circumstance where everything you saw on Friday night, all the stuff that frustrated you and you thought, wow, that's just crazy. Well, there's an awfully good chance that blows up on the whole of Congress come this fall, probably around September, when you're dealing with debt ceilings and things like that, because at the end of the day, the House and the Senate have to get on the same page. It was easy to get the House and the Senate on the same page around debt ceiling issues in the last previous Congresses, because you didn't have a divided Congress. You now have a divided Congress. And so I think that's going to be a very, very serious issue. And I think, frankly, there are strategists on the Republican side now who want to create that chaos. And Trump's just putting an exclamation mark on it. He's just talking about it. But there's people, capable people on the floor that actually want to do it.
John Nichols from The Nation, from the Cap Times locally. John, it strikes me that so many of the holdout rebellious 20, they're pretty much known insurrectionists, John. There is a lot of overlap in that Venn diagram between those that apparently were participatory in the January 6th and those that were holding out against Kevin McCarthy. And I don't know why Kevin McCarthy showed about 5 minutes of backbone and has been kissing Trump's ass ever since, but apparently he's still unpalatable to them.
Well, look, that there's a lot of ungrateful people, right? One thing to understand is Kevin McCarthy, you know, you're right. He maybe showed backbone for several minutes, but he abandoned that right away, as did most of the rest of the caucus. So this concept of standing up to Trump is just not a reality in this caucus. It's not, it doesn't happen. And where you end up with a problem here is that, you know, it's not going to get easier. You know what I mean? This is going to get more complicated because Trump has an in on this caucus, on this circumstance, that is actually quite dramatic. I don't know if you saw the picture from Friday night where I think it was Marjorie Taylor Greene handing her phone to perhaps Matt Gaetz or one of the other holdouts. And, you know, it was a close-up of the screen of the phone, and it said DT, Donald Trump. I mean, so Trump was literally calling in plays, you know, to the game, so to speak. And his ability to continue to do that is a dominant reality. And Kevin McCarthy knows it. And the one thing you can say about Kevin McCarthy is, if you're looking for a spine, that is going to be a lifelong search.
Hey, John, thanks, man. But you notice the person Marjorie Taylor Greene was handing that phone to didn't take it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Trump no. was out there saying, hey, everyone, you know, Kevin's my guy. Vote for my Kevin. Do you think that some of that influence may be waning?
I'm not so sure. I do think that there was a dramatic moment a couple days into the crisis as regards to speakership. And that's when Lauren Boebert, you know, traditionally a very Trump-aligned member, got up and said, well, you know, Trump's telling us to back Kevin McCarthy, and, you know, maybe Trump's wrong. And so that was somebody standing up to him, you know, clearly taking an alternative stand, which was interesting and significant and does suggest at least some, you know, breaking of the pattern as regards to Trump. But, you know, I think of Trump as one of these guys who, you know, he's not deep into the strategy. He clearly committed to McCarthy for reasons that you know, I think relate to the fact that McCarthy is very deferent to him. He thinks he can run McCarthy. He got some pushback from a few of his allies. But at the end of the day, I think most of those folks who were holding out are pretty loyal to Trump. They may have, you know, wanted to have a bigger fight with McCarthy than he did. But I would say that his influence in this House, just because of the narrow margins, remains significant. And I don't think he's fading altogether. But I do think, and Dom, I think you're getting to a deeper point here. I think this House at this point is going, in some cases, beyond Trump to greater extremes than Trump. So a lot of people say, oh, Trump's influence is waning. The Republican Party is going to become more responsible. It's going to come more to the mainstream. In fact, as Trump's influence wanes, there's some evidence the Republican Party is going even more to extremes than Trump went to. So what you've got is pretty much a recipe for chaos, I think, through the next 2 years in the House.
Well, certainly if some of the insurrectionist bastards get some justice handed to them, it might depress some of the moxie that they're feeling these days. How long do you think, John, until the motion to vacate, the first time it comes around, how long do you think of a honeymoon McCarthy's going to have?
Well, I mean, the first test is this afternoon. He's trying to pass the rules package. And it's interesting because trying to pass the rules package, you know, the rules package is like the most forgettable thing that ever happens in Congress. Nobody pays attention to that, or nobody outside the inner circle. But today it's big news. It's like everybody on CNN is watching closely. Some members were saying, oh, I might not go with it, blah, blah, blah. And so what we realize is that we are now in a kind of permanent chaos stage for the House because McCarthy just doesn't have control of his caucus. He doesn't have the ability to make his caucus do what he wants it to do, or frankly, what any rational person would want it to do. So the end result is that the hard right has that card they can play pretty much at any time they want to play it. I don't think that they will play it immediately because they like the drama, frankly, and they'll look for the proper moment. But remember, when you're talking about four or five people basically having the ability to screw this whole thing up, it's not going to be long before somebody decides they've got to go for it. And the one reason they may not go too quickly is an individual doing it might not want to get shot down because that might actually strengthen McCarthy. And I think their game is to keep McCarthy constantly as weak as they possibly can.
Yeah, John, but he's going to get that speaker portrait. It'll make it all worthwhile. The four-day public humiliation, the unruly caucus. It'll all be worthwhile. I hope the guy does a good picture of the man.
Well, you know, have you seen some of those younger pictures of Kevin McCarthy? He looked like he was sort of like in a synth pop band from the 80s. You know, he had that sort of big bang going across and stuff like that. So I'm hoping they use one of the older pictures, not the new ones.
John,
the new ones, he's looking a little worn out.
Well, I know how he feels. John Nichols from The Nation, man. Always appreciate you coming around, John. Happy New Year to you. We'll catch up real soon.
Thanks, John.
Happy New Year. Talk to you soon, guys. Take care.
The Devil's Advocates, making radio great again.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Phone lines are open for your take on this wonderful, magical Monday at 844-967-2789.
Dominic, I'm going to bring the magic back, bring the sexy back. We're going to get there. There is some new news from the Wisconsin, I guess you'd call it the state legislature, Journal Sentinel reporting. Molly Beck, Laura Schulte, Senate Leader LeMahieu forecast confirmation votes on key Evers appointments.
What?
It's only been 4 years.
I mean, he's governor again. I guess they really needed to be convinced that he was really, really the governor before they would allow some governance.
Well, as long as it's no one on the powerful Natural Resources Board, because they're going to screw Evers and the people of Wisconsin in that regard. Wisconsin's top Senate Republican indicated a willingness to vote on the confirmation of Democratic Governor Tony Evers' cabinet appointees while casting doubt on the governor's appointees to the powerful Natural Resources Board. So we're only semi-fascist.
Right. Just a little bit.
Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu, Republican from Utsburg, said secretary appointments would be sent to the corresponding standing committees for hearings. If approved, Senate leaders will schedule confirmation votes, a historically routine process that was largely abandoned by Senate Republicans during Evers' first term, leaving 185 appointments unconfirmed, including key cabinet positions.
185.
Well, listen to the reasonable tone LeMahieu now takes, Dom. I think we need to take our job seriously as a Senate, with the ability to have oversight over those. We'll work through them, through the process, and take up or down votes.
Well, Crudy, that begs the question. If you think we need to take our job seriously as a Senate now, can I infer from that statement that you did not take your job seriously as a Senate before?
Oh, you can infer whatever you want, Dom. A little bit more. LeMahieu also cast doubt on other appointees, such as those Evers made last term to the Natural Resources Board, who have yet to receive a confirmation hearing. Here is what the hypocrite... Well, I'll stop the pre-casting of aspersions, Dom. It seems like a couple of the appointments to the DNR board may be a little more political than our caucus might be in favor of. Unlike that Preen guy?
Right, no politics there whatsoever when he was, you know, communicating with the former governor and Republicans as to what to squat and stay on his seat.
Including Senator Devin LeMahieu, the Senate Republican leader, who is quoted here. You were in conspiracy with the man, semi-fascist LeMahieu. People who maybe don't have the background needed to be on the DNR board. Like the dentist from frickin' Wausau?
Yeah, but he's a dentist from Wausau.
So I think we'll have to take a very close look at those. They're going to look real hard now.
A very, very close look. Crudy, Brett Kudebeck, a spokeswoman for Evers, said the governor remained hopeful that his appointees would be given a chance to go before the Senate and show their qualifications. A quote, Governor Evers, nearly 2 years ago now, appointed two exceptionally qualified individuals to serve on the Natural Resources Board who are committed to our state's proud heritage of sporting and conservation, believe in protecting our environment, and understanding firsthand the critical role our natural resources play in Wisconsin's economy. The governor remains hopeful the state, Wisconsin State Senate will confirm his appointments to the Natural Resources Board expeditiously, Crudy, this session.
Do you actually look at these so-called partisans? Do you look at what their records look like? What their resumes look like?
Their actual background, their bio, right, right.
Nass, who is the Walker, the Evers appointee to replace the Walker overstay, Frederick Preen, right? That's the guy that refused to vacate his seat.
Yeah, the dentist.
The dentist, you know, the nonpartisan guy, except that we've seen the released text messages and email that made clear, according to the reporting here, the role partisan politics played in the desire to maintain a 4-3 majority on the board of Republican appointees. Again, the hypocrisy, I just hate to lead with it. Preen stepped down in December after holding over nearly 20 months. I mean, I used to be a real estate fiduciary, Dom. That'd be a big deal. 20 months, a squatter, giving his successor, Sandra Nass, a chance to finally take her seat on the board. Well, here's Nass's resume. She's a teacher in the Drummond School District. She served as the chair of the Bayfield County Conservation Congress and vice chair of the Bayfield County Deer Advisory Committee for 6 years, but she stepped down from that role while waiting for her appointment, right? She's supposed to be on the DNR board, so she steps down from another committee, only she doesn't get the job because the guy's holding over for the last 20 months. She also has her own business. Is she a dentist? Oh, no, she's focused on soil conservation. And, oh, yeah, she's also an avid outdoorsman. She has more than 30 years of conservation experience. Partisan hack, as a Republican would call her. Here's one more. In addition to Nass, Sharon Adams, who was also appointed by Evers in 2021, but has not yet received a hearing from the Senate, Adams is the co-founder of the Walnut Way Conservation Corps, a Milwaukee community development organization dedicated to environmentally sustainable neighborhoods. Well, you see the problem there. Well, she's from Milwaukee, Dom.
Well,
that makes her a partisan.
That's right.
She also served as a board advisor for the UW-Madison College of Agriculture and Life Sciences and has advised the city of Milwaukee on policy issues impacting natural resources. They seem pretty good. I mean, these are damn good resumes for an appointment on the DNR board.
Well, I mean, it's no dentist, but at the end of the day, Governor Evers won. And then he won again. He's got the right to put in his people. And if they're actually in the industry and not just the dentist, and I don't know what Preen's, you know, hobbies were, but certainly he was not, it was not in conservation and in natural resources.
Tommy Thompson, you know, the former Republican governor, his DNR secretary, George Meyer, says that, you know, effectively, do your job, Senate. Said the Senate needs to hold hearings and votes on Evers' appointees. Not doing so is only setting a harmful precedent for both political parties in the future. Well, Republicans don't ever plan on giving up control of the legislature. They bake the cake, you know, the whole gerrymandering. But here's Meyer's statement. I'm not minimizing that the Senate has the right to vote somebody up or down. That's their right. But they should be holding hearings and taking a public vote. If they don't think the person is qualified, they should have the hearing and vote the man or woman down. If the Senate has concerns over Nass, they should hold a hearing. If they didn't think she was qualified, why didn't they vote on it instead of not doing anything about it? It's an abdication of responsibility. Well, the Republicans often say, I take no responsibility whatsoever.
I mean, you can't expect someone who doesn't believe in government to try to govern. It just kind of goes against their grain.
Well, Dominic, he doesn't come around here anymore, but Governor Tony Evers going on our Buddy Earl show Wednesday morning, 9:15 Central Time. Give him a listen. Originating on the WAUK, the Shaw, on the Civic Media app. Think Tony will ever come back here, Dom?
Only if you ask him really, really nicely.
Again? I don't think he's coming. But we'll be back. I hope you stick around.